Everyone, thank you so much for coming on today's call. Today is March 6th, and we are at the end of our first module, our marketing and advertising techniques. As you can see here up on the board, you guys have been through a couple different classes already in reviews of a lot of different things that we're doing on the lead generation side of the business. Lead generation pillars and sorting your database. We talked about the importance of, you know, online, offline marketing, your COI, social media. We went over a lot of different things on that. A lot of you had some really great feedback on it, of things that you didn't know or things that you were working on that you had success with. So I'm glad that you guys were able to take advantage of that. And then on February 7th, we went over using weekly emails to crush your competition. The importance of, you know, we get all these leads, we get all these people that we get in our databases through Zillow, through Commissions Inc., through Market Leader, through all these different sources that we have. But what are we doing with them? By actually sending them in a weekly email, and it doesn't have to be always real estate related, but more about you, the personality about you, how you, your stories and things that you've done throughout the week. And I know that a handful of you have reached out to me. I've had some really good results from keeping in touch with these people each and every week, where all of a sudden people just raising their hand and saying, thank you for your email. Hey, I am looking to buy a home, or I am looking to sell my house. And it's because you're staying top of mind with them each and every week. So I'm glad to see that that was a very good session for you guys. And then last week, Brian and Trish did, or 2 weeks ago, Brian and Trish did using geographic farming to get more listings. Let's face it, you know, it's all about getting listings at this point. It always has been. This is nothing new. It's always been there about getting listings. And geographic farming still works. I don't care what anyone says. You know, being in that mailbox, you're going to get in front of people that you're not going to get on social media. You're not going to get on online type sources. And it's, again, people got to get to know you, trust you, like you. And surveys show that when you have knowledge of your neighborhood, they see those testimonials that you have on there, they see that evidence of success that you're selling in that neighborhood or giving them great information about that neighborhood, they're going to tend to want to do business with you, or at least give you the opportunity to interview. So that's going good. And, you know, I talked to you guys about this a couple of weeks ago as well. We did a home seller workshop here in the community. I'm down in Florida now, in the neighborhood that I'm in. And we just listed this Monday, I went live, a $1.8 million listing that came from, again, geographic farming, working in that neighborhood, and then having an actual lunch and learn home seller workshop that we did for the neighbors. And it worked out to be very good, and it continues to do so. We're actually going to be doing one again on March 20th because the first one worked so well. So we're going to be looking to do these at least every other month, if not a minimum every quarter, and be able to attract more people within that geographic farm area. Today, we got a special guest, a very good friend of mine, Mr. Danny Griffin. And you're going to be, Danny was up in New York last year to talk at a real estate success summit, did a great job. And I've known Danny for many years. I'm going probably at least 20 plus years, and we've been really good friends. And he's like the mad scientist when it comes to lead generation and all the different things on marketing and all the different strategies. You know, he's worked on all kinds of direct response marketing ads, you name it. He's tested it and proved it, and then he goes live with it and shares with everyone. So we got Danny coming on today. But just to give you some background on Danny, Danny's the founder and CEO of Griffin Realty Group. It's a residential real estate brokerage in Boston and Cape Cod, Massachusetts. He was an experienced investor and commercial developer before becoming a licensed real estate agent in 1999 for Realty Executives, where he became the number 7 agent worldwide and then went on to found Danny Griffin Real Estate. Now it's known as the Griffin Realty Group. Danny also is a coach and trainer for his coaching program, the Realty Classroom, where he teaches top producing agents on how to systemize their business. Danny's system for selling properties quickly during the Great Recession landed him and his brother John an 8-episode TV series on A&E's 60 Seconds to Sell, which features a unique approach of selling residential homes during the recession. Danny realized that the highest calling in life is to serve others. This philosophy permeates through all of his personal and business activities. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring on Mr. Danny Griffin. Danny, are you there?
I'm here.
There he is. I remember the show, 60 Seconds to Sell.
If you blinked, it was over in 60 seconds too, just as fast
eight
as
eight episodes.
Can.
Yeah. No, that was a great, great episode. And between you and John, you did a great job hamming and egging.
Yeah.
So that was really good.
Thank you.
So Danny, thank you so much for being on today's call. I know that obviously you heard some of the background with what we do and what we've been doing here in the first module. And I'm going to actually take that off the screen there for now. But just to really talk about lead generation, I think lead generation, let's face it, it's the engine to our businesses. And so many agents, you know, when I talk to them and they're in a slump, it always comes back to not doing the activities, not doing the behaviors that are going to generate that business for them. And lead generation has definitely been at the top of the list when it comes to anytime I see someone in a slump or not doing well. It's always with the lead generation. There's not either doing it, or they got call reluctance, or they just don't know how. So I wanted you to kind of just share a little about your background, maybe talk a little about what you've done with lead generation and some of your findings have been, and then we'll go into some different ideas.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling me the mad scientist. The greatest compliment I can get is that. And I'm sitting down here in my little basement, you know, studio office where mad science happens. And you can see all these great books behind me that formulated a lot of the answers to the questions you're asking. And I think probably what I would say, you probably said enough about me and my background. I appreciate that. I have been doing it a long time, 24 years, doing it as an active agent per se, broker, obviously. But I'm still very active. And I just came through this door coming from one of my deals like you talking about listing. I mean, I think the great news about listening to us is we do this. And when you do it, you have an idea for what's happening at that assembly line level. And that's what I would say when it comes to the mad science, which is not so complicated after all. I think it came from really just studying business. And that leads you to the discussion about leads, because if you would all just get up above your business, and this is what I had to do to myself, Willie and I, we were tactical, right? I mean, we were taught how to sell, 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 and we probably naturally did that. And all we wanted to do was sell the next one, sell the next one. Well, that makes you look really blinded like this, and you're not seeing strategically like this. So I read a lot, and I think I did a lot of YouTube study as well about Henry Ford. There was just something about Henry Ford's business. And by the way, that comes from Napoleon Hill's work, Law of Success. In the Law of Success, Napoleon Hill had studied all of these really successful business people in the Gilded Age. So really the late 1800s into the 1900s, there were a lot of people that proliferated and built the structure of what we call the United States now, from railroads to oil to steel. So there was a lot of success. And then later on, automobiles, and it really proliferated, transportation got complicated. So a lot happens there historically. And you can learn a lot as a business person by looking into some of the basics. And so I really got stuck a lot on Henry Ford. And it's because what I saw in Henry Ford was that assembly line. I mean, people talk about Ford in the car. They don't really give him the credit he's due for the proliferation of an assembly line. And he learned that by studying history and actual real live history. He would travel down from Detroit to Chicago to watch the meatpacking industry and how they would process meat. And so he learned the assembly line and he learned all these specialties. So if you just look at your business as an assembly line, and that's what I did, I imagined myself creating a happy past client, not a commission check. That's the obvious part. The obvious part of a business is that you spend money and then you make money, and hopefully you make more money than you spend. But really the asset that I was trying to create was a happy past client, because I understood that that person was likely to someday repeat with me, as long as I followed up, and refer. So that's the accelerant. And I know Willie is master at all things referral business. So I saw that and I wanted to create that as an asset, as a business asset. The more people that were five-star Google happy, right, then that was a good outcome. But you got to go all the way back to the beginning. And that led me to think, okay, what is the beginning, like the steel that you have to use to build a Model T, for example? He must have bought that from Carnegie. It must have got dumped in the yard, just like leads. It's no different. Our raw material to manufacture this happy past client starts off with leads. And without leads, there is no raw material. You don't have any context. But then I started to think, well, what is a lead? A lead is, it's a disposition of a contact. So really, the raw material that we're looking for is contact information. And that really changed my perspective, because then as I saw a contact rolling along my assembly line, all that was changing was what I call disposition of that contact, meaning a lead is in its rawest form. I don't know anything about why they want to sell or buy. I don't know anything about their level of motivation, and I use the scale of 1 to 10 to determine that. So I don't even know if my raw material yet is good. So I heard Willie reference a couple things real quick about internet leads, market leader, Commissions Inc. I could go on and on. A lot of you have been birthed into our business when internet has played such a huge role that it's made us forget that that's not a requirement to get good contact information of somebody who has context to sell or buy. And that was just a huge reset for me that I had probably about now 11, 10 years ago, so that I really reset my brain to think like a business person so that I could stop the noise and say, in Michael Gerber's words in the E-Myth, you can probably see it right behind me, how does this business really work? So when you look at the business and how it really works, you say, all right, well, it has an MLS system, which is a lot like the New York Stock Exchange, where something's traded. And what's traded is a listing. And so you have to first post something for sale. That's called the listing. Okay, great. So without listings in the MLS, there's really no business. There's chaos. Right. That's correct. So who gets those listings? And that was like a hit on the side of the head, where it's like, oh my gosh. No wonder why when they say, when you're first in the business, you got to have listings to last and all these stupid quirks they say, but they don't really explain the business to you. That without listings, there is no business. If you do primarily buyer agency, you work for all the listing agents. Yeah. And that's what really started to hit me. Don't worry, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Buyers are necessary, but I'll talk to you about how I have evolved in my prioritization of what type of buyer lead. But going back to the front end, leads are not a scarce thing. They're everywhere. But the quality of leads can be a scarce thing depending on how you go about trying to get them. So again, remember, a lead is really a contact, meaning a fully formed contact, by the way, is what? Somebody's full name, it's their full address, it's their email address, and it's their phone number. That's what a contact is. So the best raw material for a seller or buyer contact, you have all of those components. And that makes for a really good raw material, because that means down the line somewhere, when you become strategic about your marketing, whether it's telemarketing, direct mail marketing, door knock, right? Really direct sales kind of stuff like that, digital marketing, the more of that information, the contact you have, the more mediums upon which you can deliver a message. So I think before you start to talk about leads, you have to see that as the fundamental starting point for your assembly line to manufacture your happy past client. You want me to pause there, Willie? Any questions, thoughts?
I think it's so true, like getting the right information is going to be extremely important. You know, I think back to some of our databases when I talk to some agents now, 30, 40, 50,000 names and email addresses in their database, but they're not of any quality. They don't know anything about these people. They don't know their home address. They don't know, they have an email, half of them don't even work anymore, right? So it's not really their database. It's the ones that they've cultured and nurtured over time and have actually earned the right to get more information from them, earned the right to get their mailing address, earned the right to know what their time frame is buying and selling. And those are the better quality leads that you're going to get. So I guess the question really comes down to, and I know I get this from a lot of agents, is, okay, now that we know what the material is, right, like you're saying with these leads, how do we attract them in a way that makes sense for the agent? Because it's very costly a lot of times now to buy leads, right? Yeah. Some agents don't know what's the best platform to do so, whether it be social media, Facebook, direct mail, phone calls. I mean, to me, it all works, right? It all works. All the mediums work. It's just a matter of what your target is and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, well, I, Look, I know you do a nice job with this course here that they all follow. It's holistic, right? So I'm going to keep using that word holistic. It's impossible to talk about leads without pulling together database management, right? I mean, that's an important thing. But it also is impossible to talk about leads without first starting with marketing fundamentals. And one of the most major marketing fundamentals is the term avatar or ideal client. So this concept, I'm trying to create this happy past client, but I have to then imagine in my brain, who is the ideal person? Who's ideal? That contact, if I'm to draw up an idealistic marketing avatar, what does it look like? So let's go back to what I said about the business. For me, now again, this is for me, and I'll answer both sell side and buy side questions, but I was primarily a buyer's agent for a very, very long time because I made the misperception that, oh, buyers are easy. They're everywhere. I'll pick them up at open houses. I can hear somebody talking about buying. I'll give them a card. So my business decisions early on were misdirected as it relates to how does the business really work? And if I want to sustain my business in the long run, I should be thinking about the avatar as a seller. So that's what I started with and said, okay, I want a seller, but then I want to be a profitable agent. So I have to look at it in a microorganism of one deal. So the way to be profitable, I thought, was why don't I just look at the median price and above? Because a median is the middle number. So if you went to Albany and you went into the MLS and you looked at everything, there would be as many sales higher than that number as there are lower. So I realized that by not thinking about avatar first, I would just run down the hill, tripping all over myself to just get any leads in a volume of leads. And so this phenomenon that really happened late 90s, early 2000s in this business was the proliferation of the internet lead. And why it became so popular is because you could get a lot of them. And your perception and my perception, which was misperceived, is that a lot of them is better than few of them. And that's just not true. That turns out to be really dangerous. And Willie already touched upon why, because you can fill a database with garbage, most of which on the internet are just whimsical internet inquiries, and they're not even truly leads, somebody who truly had an early interest in selling or buying. So it's a tricky place to start. And here's the good news, though. That is expensive. But the better news is that seller leads are hiding in plain sight. In my series that I do like Willie, I have a whole section there that says leads are hiding in plain sight. And so that's when I finally stopped ignoring the business and putting my blinders on and saying, oh, expireds are no good. I mean, you know, that's no good. You know, they expired and they expired for a reason and they're blah, blah, blah. On and on, I went with the excuses until one day I was driving into my own neighborhood and I looked at this $2 million listing that I knew had expired and a guy signed one up that I knew wasn't better than me. And I said, that's it. I'm done with putting the blinders on. I will become an expert at getting expired leads. And by the way, getting expired leads is free. They were right in the MLS. If I didn't want to spend a nickel, I could look them up. These days, either free services or very inexpensive, I could find a telephone number. Great. Avatar. I know above median. I know geographically where they are, and I know they're selling. That's the beginning of a marketing avatar. But now, when I pick up the phone and I talk to them, how am I going to be unique? Now, the default in everybody's brain is they go, oh, I don't have a resume. I haven't sold a high-end house yet. Well, why should that be the standard? Because now you go back to marketing principles. So we have the avatar marketing principle. Now we go back to the thing called the unique selling proposition, which that term proliferated, by the way, in the 1940s. If you go to Wikipedia and you look at Rosser Reeves at Ted Bates and Company, he is, I guess he's granted the credit for the proliferation of the term unique selling proposition. Mm-hmm. But a unique selling proposition caused me a dilemma too, because I started to think, well, how am I going to say I'm different from Willie, right? What am I going to say? I mean, he's good, I'm good. You know, how am I going to be unique from him? Don't we do the same things? So I got a little bit of a dilemma there. And I started to think to myself, well, wait a minute, it's not about me. It's about the avatar that I just created. And if you also go back to some real marketing fundamentals, there's something called a freemium that's talked about forever. It's the free sample. That goes back in time when you could, Willie, I don't know if you can remember this, but you used to be able to send in like a self-addressed envelope and some money, and they'd send you back a free record sample. You know, I mean, I forget what that company was called, but the freemium has been around forever. So I just sat down and said, okay, if I were going to give away my best sampling for free, what would it be? Well, at the extreme level, it would be I would list Willie's house for free. I'd go do everything that I do, and I would sell his house for free, but obviously not a good business model, so I'm not going to offer that. But what if I just took how I know how to sell, and I make that into a plan, and I write out this plan in an information product, and I create this magazine kind of looking thing that explains to somebody how I would sell a house, how I see the prioritization of these things. And I created that, and I had my freemium. So now I had an avatar, and I had a freemium, and I said, okay, that looks like a unique selling proposition. And then I went out, and Willie's asking the question, how do you attract them? Well, I went out and tried to offer that to people, but that turns out that's what they need. And nobody really wants to talk about what they need. They want to talk about what they want. So what did I do? I looked at what Zillow was proliferating, which was giving away pictures and details of properties, right, for sale. And I said, well, why don't I just print those out, five or six of them that are a little above that expired and below it, with a map and everything, put them together. Add that to this. And then they all want to know how the market is. Why don't I put a one-page market update? Boom. I had a unique selling proposition. If somebody says, why should I do business with you above and beyond all the other options, including doing nothing at all, I'll say, because I have a plan. And here it is. Oh, by the way, I'll give you my plan and some pictures and a market update for free so that I will prove to you that I have this thing. And you don't even have to have an obligation to use me. But I'm so certain that I'm the only one that's doing it this way. I'm going to give it to you and just trust that that's going to be the case. So, Willie, those two things really helped me decide why listing leads rather than just saying listings versus buy. That's why I started with that. And then because I could find the avatar easily in the expired pile, meaning I knew how much, I knew where, and I knew they had tried an agent. There were so many things that I could read into it. And then recently, to balance that off on the sellers, I knew that expireds go up and down, especially in Albany. You know, I've trained a couple of your agents, and it was very difficult for them to find expireds because Albany has been as tight as it can be. You hardly expired anything. So then we went and said, okay, what else is certain in our business on the listing side? And that's death. Somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to have a property in that estate that needs to be sold. So then there was probates. And then FSBOs, and you could go on and on and on, but those are all hiding in plain sight. There's nothing that we have to do to actually attract those leads because they exist. Now, do you have to spend some money to acquire the contact information for them? Yes, but that's very different in its conceptual, you know, approach than just trying to go to the internet and come up with a pithy line to an opt-in page to hoping that you can find somewhere in those whimsical inquiries somebody who actually has an interest soon to sell. Now, see, an expired that's thinking about reselling is soon. A probate who just inherited a house and can't afford to keep it is now. Mm-hmm. Those are examples of leads that have contact information attached to them that have context to sell. So I think, Willie, I'll take a breath there because that's how I reoriented to sellers, and I'm happy to go into what I feel is the best buyer business next.
Okay, yeah, and with the listings, I think, like you said, the low-hanging fruit's gonna be those expireds or FSBOs. We're starting to see more of them come on the market now. Not as many as we were used to seeing back in 2000 and early 2000s. Even 2010 through 15, there was a lot of expireds back then, but it has tightened up for sure. But so for a new agent or even experienced agent looking to get their business going again in doing listings, expired FSBOs, those are still big for you. You talked about probate. I know that's one as well. But when it comes down to the actual, your story, I think is great. What we talked about when you went back into heavy into personal production, remember back in 07 through 09, we talked about the great, recession. Yep. But Danny, you said, I got to go get listings. I got to get those higher end luxury type listings. And you started really just reformatting everything, which, your whole marketing approach to it. But talk to us about what was the change that you did there? And what was the actual Because you're doing a lot of more luxury listings. You've been luxury websites. I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, I was just on your website earlier looking at your website, and it's a gorgeous website, which I got here on the screen. But this is something that, you know, you created, and you really took your whole brand and changed it. Maybe you could just talk a little about that, because I think there's some people that either have to reinvent themselves or they just gotta start somewhere. And it's a great place to go.
Sure. Well, Willie, I would tell you, you know, one of my favorite books, let me see if I can grab it. I have to say it has nothing to do with that part until it has to do with this part. So this book changed my life, The New Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, right? I mean, this was a game changer for me, because I started to realize, as this thing hit me in the head, because it's been sitting back there forever, right? What I realized was, the first thing that all of you should understand is it's not someday that you can do this, right? I didn't have to have all those years of experience to do this. I could have done this in the first couple of months. It's just that I never used mind systems to see myself before I ever sold a single house as being a luxury agent. And by the way, I loosely define luxury to be median price and above. Better to focus on average and above, because that's getting skewed by ultra luxury. But that's all that definition means. Because a lot of you get intimidated. Oh, you know, I don't have luxury here in Albany. Yeah, yes, you do by that definition. By that definition, what Willie's talking about is, I had, let's be specific with Cape Cod, which was my primary market at the time. Now both Boston and Cape Cod. Now that my kids are out of the house, I flow between two. So if I took Cape Cod though, Willie, when we were at Proctor and we got caught up in a lot of this distress sale marketing, what happened was all of that was attracting a lower end buyer, and you know, lower end buyer, seller, whatever. It was just attracting them because those words attract that, right? I mean, it doesn't attract a more sophisticated buyer. Look, I'm not saying that a higher end buyer doesn't want a great deal. I'm not saying that. But the word distress is very bloody. It's very ugly. Foreclosures, very ugly. You can make a living down there, but you have to be able to do a lot of volume, and your cost per deal doesn't really change. So those were the things that I recognized. And when I looked at my average sale, now here's the real test to give you all smelling salts. Look in the mirror and ask yourself, am I a below average agent? And even if you're new to the business, am I going to be a below average agent? And that's really how I rerouted myself first. So it was a mindset. It was a self-image. Because if you looked at my average sales, sure, I was going to these conferences and I was doing what my 1 year mostly by myself, 68 sides. And, you know, then with a team, it was on and on. Who cared, right? Because what I wasn't doing was being the business person that I had always trained myself to be and think first. So once I started to think, luxury defined above. So then I would start to go in and I would start to compete. And that's where I learned, okay, I went in, Willie, I got into a $4 million listing presentation in Hyannisport. I had the 7-step pinwheel. The guy loved it. He was pointing to it, saying it. But he said, yeah, but Danny, these guys have a really good website and they say they have New York buyers. So I had two objections, Willie, straight from a multi-million dollar listing that I didn't get. So I went back and said, I have to deal with those things. So slowly but surely, I went to WordPress and I started to mess around with just making a website look better. No matter what I had on there, I figured if I just made it look better, that was my digital calling place. If you're going to vet me, you're going to go check me out online, and most likely you're going to look at my business. I needed to be ready. So I started looking at that company that beat me, Ravis. They were regional and they were bragging about they had the greatest website. When I really looked at it, it wasn't rocket science. They were just doing really what Zillow was doing, what anybody was doing. They were making a nice depiction of the property. So their beautiful digital pictures, et cetera, were up there. It wasn't loaded with the stuff you and I were taught about with these free reports and all this stuff. It's not what people wanted. What people wanted, and Keeping Current Matters wrote a really funny tongue-in-cheek article calling it real estate pornography. That's what they wanted. They wanted beautiful pictures of properties and they wanted to see them. Ask Redfin how that business model worked out for them, right? So I just started to incorporate that into a website, and I understood that a lot of marketing is perception. Perception is reality, goes the same. But in marketing, man, is that true. Because if I tell you I can sell your $4 million, $2 million, $750,000 listing, you're going to go vet me. And if you see a bunch of flunky looking houses that are broken down on my website and you don't really see a luxury feel, you might like me a lot. But you're going to go with somebody who's not as good as me simply because they have a better perception. And then I continued to polish that by going to brands that I respected, Sotheby's, and I looked at their websites. So it was really just more so first about how do you present to the public all of this. And of course, I could rig the perception because when I pulled in IDX, I could game the system so that I was pulling in everybody else's luxury listing onto my website so that when a consumer went there, they would see all of these listings. Now, of course, in an honest way, I have a section for my featured listings, but I don't pull in every listing I take into my featured. That's why I created my own website company, because I didn't want it to just be MLS. I don't want to show you the $425,000 listing that I was happy to take and take care of. He's a past client, put him into a trailer literally for $159,000 because he lost his wife and it was a mess. But I'm not going to take that and promote that as part of the brand. That's not what I'm trying to attract more of. So a lot of it had to do with presentation and perception thereof. So that changed physically on all of what I did from signage to business cards, to the packages of information. I don't know if I have one in this office here. Literally a lot of this stuff was simple, Willie. It was about going out and getting that nice thick business card, a nice, folder from WB Mason, and then all of the materials, whatever I could do to make those feel better, higher quality. So the infographics, these were made on, cardstock. So we made those. The magazine that I referred to was real magazine copy, right? You can see it's a real magazine, beautiful pictures and presentation. Well, that's all just perception, but it's valuable, simple information. Like, for example, if I were to educate you all about what we really did for our unique selling proposition, this is a little bit more of an analysis one. We take the cover off of it, but what they really want are pictures and details of properties that sold around theirs. And the buyer wants that too. Buyer needs to know and wants to know, like, if I'm going to buy a house, what does the money buy? So we gave it to them. We gave them pictures with lists, right? And then we gave them pictures and details of properties that sold. This is an information product. And we just don't think of it. We can't wait to digitally send something to somebody instead of getting physical. People love physical because they're still physical. As much as they leverage digital, it gets lost in the spam file. It gets buried in emails. Ask Trisha how hard it is for her to get me. Like, everything gets buried in an email. But you give me something like this, when I get home at night after a long day, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to read this. I'm going to look at this. Then we said, okay, that's what you really want to know, pictures and details. But you also want to know how the market is. So we made you a one pager. It's a cheat sheet to answer how's the market. And then you don't know this, but you need a plan. So bang, unique selling proposition, just like that. Like, there's no rocket science in this. It's what everybody does, but it's the fact that I took the time to curate the information like a museum curator. I went out into the world, I got all this information, I organized it, and I productized it, right? I get rewarded for that as a unique selling proposition. So clearly when I give this to you, whether it's at an open house, and I'll touch on that too, because I feel bad that I'm not talking about the buy side, because I love the buy side off me an open house. I'm like a junkie. Awesome.
Yeah. We'll switch on to the buy side.
Yeah, I'm like a junkie in the weekends. So let's just tell you that this goes out to a seller and it converts me a listing. I cannot wait to get to that listing on the weekend because I am an old school market maker. Everybody's getting lazy, okay? I'm telling you right now, when you hear this, I hope it's smelling salts to help you. Don't be reactive. Be a proactive agent. So when people look at me as the owner of the company going into their house to do an open house, they're like, huh? I'm like, no, you don't understand. This is the most pivotal moment. This is when I can make a market for your house. So I can quickly sell your house if I get the feedback live. Right. And my benefit, of course, is if I double end one. So I have a probate listing that we just got recently and I have a double ended buyer and I've picked up two buyers off of it. So let me do that math for you. Simply because we got a probate lead, We served them with this. I went in and talked about the seven steps. I beat four people and they didn't know me from Adam. I don't have a name in Dorchester, Massachusetts. I'd never sold a single house in that section of the city. And I beat four people because I read this to them. Seven steps. And then I get it. And I tell them, as part of my push marketing, I am going to open house this thing to death. And I did. Every single weekend that I could put a 90-minute open house together, I let, you know, I let good old iPhones and Droids do the work for me, because everybody can't wait to use Zillow and Redfin to find the next open house. They're not calling their agents for the most part. They're just using this, and they're walking through the door with this, and I'm there all alone like a wolf, right? Because I'm there to not only sell the property and get feedback for the seller, but I'm also there ready with my buyer package, which looks the same, ready to hand this to somebody who signs in. Willie, thanks so much for coming to the open house. The sellers asked that everybody sign in. If you don't mind doing so, they would appreciate that. When you're done with that, you can take one of those feature sheets and then you can see the property. My open house, private property, I'm telling you how to behave. This isn't like, just because we open the doors with an open house doesn't mean you run roughshod over us. We're in charge. We're the maitre d' of this, right? We're the hostess, whoever we are. We're at the front and we say, the rules of the game are sign in, grab a sheet, have some fun. So that's real live lead capture, right? But it's so close to prospect. So now let's go along that assembly line. Because I'm in somebody's face, I can turn a contact lead on that sheet into a contact prospect right there in the open house. Because the next line that I'll have after they sign in, are you folks looking for yourselves? So I know if I'm talking to the primary buyer. Yes, we are. Great. How goes the hunt? Right? Oh, well, you know, we're just getting started, or geez, it's difficult. There's not a lot of inventory. Great. Let me just tell you a little bit about this house. Some of the great features of this house are captain's house built in 1890s, addition in 86. Blah, blah, blah. Go take a peek. And now I've softened the room with professionalism. Mm-hmm. They've seen how I've asked them to sign in, how I'm behaving, how I greet them. So I have a little bit of an ice break. Now, as they go around, they're asking questions. If they have kids, I'll engage the kids. And then they'll begin to ask me questions because they're relaxed. And now I start to give them and demonstrate some insight. See, the whole thing about these listings and buyers is we want to give them information so we can get to the point where we're offering insight. Because once we give our insight, that's when they become client level. It's a listing presentation, right? Hey, Willie, yeah. I'd like to send you out these three pieces of information, but if you let me bring it over because you're so motivated to sell, I'll add in a couple points of insight. I'll tell you what to do and what not to do to get the best dollar, but I'll also do an analysis of your price and I'll show you exactly what you walk away with. May I do that? So now I got a couple of those things. So with the buyer, alternatively, I'm saying, geez, where are you guys looking? Oh, she goes to school over in Cambridge. Yeah, it's a little bit of a tough commute from here to Cambridge. But if you look in South Brookline and you look in Jamaica Plain, they have the diverse neighborhood you're looking for, but you can get over to Cambridge much easier from that side of the city. Oh, really? Now they start leaning in because I'm giving away my best what to do insight and information for free. And that's in Robert Cialdini's dynamite book, Influence, The Law of Reciprocity. There is no better marketing play than the law of reciprocity. So by giving away my insights, we draw them in. Lastly, I'll summarize by saying all that goes well, but the minute they leave, my relationship starts to go like this because I haven't shown them any properties yet. So there's no sense of agency, just that I'm professional. So I have a light prospect. So on Monday mornings, we follow up. Thank you so much for coming. By the way, we sent you via email a couple of these properties in Brookline with the sold prices. Danny gave you Dorchester solds in the package, plus some for sales, but we added Brookline. It's in your email. Could you please confirm that's there? And now what we're doing is I told Laura, my client care manager, there are no buyers anymore. I'm the buyer. Meaning what? I'm getting all these higher end professional couples that are busy. I told her, you book me to go to the open houses and let's see if that stimulates them to want to join me. And if it does, add a couple of more that don't have open houses. So all of a sudden, this proactive approach is this, it's working. Let's just leave it at that.
You know, and you're educating the public, you're educating the buyer, you're educating the seller. Right. It's great content, like you said, it's professional. And you're right, a lot of agents have gotten very lazy over the years, to the point where they don't do any of that. They come to an open house 5 minutes before it opens, they hand out, you know, MLS sheets, here you go.
Yeah.
And take a look and let me know how you like it. If you don't like it, then they leave. You know, they can have 10, 15, 20 people through. And it's amazing that agents will say, well, they all had agents they were working with, or not no,
not true. If they don't use a sign-in sheet that asks for the realtor's name, they don't know, they're guessing and they're dismissing. And I don't knock the agent, because the agent's never been trained to do something like this correctly. But again, go back to the assembly line. They're all mini assembly lines in the assembly line. An open house is an assembly line. There's the door, there's the sign-in sheet, there's the MLS sheet. Then we can determine who's got the right raw material to turn into a buyer prospect or potentially a seller prospect. One of the ladies that came through their house has two properties to sell across town where I happen to be selling something. So what did I do? I drove to them. I took pictures of them and I gave them to Laura so that she could see the two houses and say, oh, Danny drove by. This one's got a great location. These houses are really clean. So we're just showing proactivity. And what we're doing, Willie, is we're creating a sense of agency even before a formal agency exists.
Trust. You're building a trust too.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about because we have a few minutes left on here, just kind of give some reference to a couple different things on here. As far as any, are you doing any type of workshops or postcards, mailing, anything, direct mail piece, or are you sticking really to just those avatars and reaching out to them?
We're huge on leading with telemarketing. Telemarketing is by far and away the number one medium that we use to deliver our message, because it is the most leveraged and it is the most direct. The best one would be door knocking, but we just don't have capacity to do that, right? I mean, because that's the fastest path to get to a real human is the best. But if you remove yourself one back, at least we go auditory on the phone. So telemarketing is number one. So as it relates to this, now we just say, okay, so we have a fundamental buyer and seller package that are our unique selling propositions. But how do we deal with the context on top of that? Expired, probate. So we just came up with simple scripts that introduce us professionally. And they all have Cialdini-like laws of influence in them. When we speak, we try to speak baritone to invoke the law of authority. We definitely always lead every script with a gift, an offering of something physical or service. So it really became telemarketing and scripts that had context. You and I learned a universal script. I don't agree with that. I think you have to recognize somebody's context to let them know you know them to a certain extent. So for example, Willie, this is Danny Griffin from Griffin Realty Group. The reason I'm calling is because I noticed your beautiful home online and I noticed that it didn't sell. So I'd like to send you some information that will help you sell it the next time. May I do that? Every one of those lines is extremely intentional. The word because is a trigger word. Beautiful triggers the law of likability. There are a lot of things in that are very subtle, but extremely psychologically driven and important. Now, when you get somebody on the phone using the expired context that still wants to sell, asking them if they want free information to help them sell the next time is like a doctor hitting you on the knee with a rubber hammer. You can't help yourself but say yes. So the knee goes up for the people that are still serious. Wonderful. May I confirm the mailing address is 123 Main Street? Great. Hey, Willie, by the way, we take the time to customize this package of information, and it will include pictures and details of properties that sold around you straight from MLS, just like realtors, a one-page statistical market update that will show you the exact direction of current market pricing. And as a bonus, I'm going to include the 7-step plan that we customize for our clients. May I send that? So it's a double opt-in. We're not just looking for...
No one's going to say no to that.
No, it's almost impossible, isn't it? Right? Assuming you have that context. And that's exactly what they mean by an irresistible offer. So all this stuff you see on the internet about irresistible offers, you think, oh, that's bullshit. It's not. If you make the right offer of the right information to the right person at the right time, it is irresistible. They cannot say no. And that's also sort of the vetting that a good script does. A good script isn't just desperate to get the next lead turned into a prospect to bloat the database. Now, once that's complete, we finish the first beat by booking a time with them to say, wonderful. Like I said, we take the time to customize this, so I want to make sure it arrives. What's the best day after Wednesday next week to call you? Thursday, great. Any time in particular? 5 o'clock, great. I'm going to call you Thursday at 5 o'clock to make sure this custom package shows up. Okay, bang, done. So we have a point in the future because they're still very difficult to get back on the phone, right? Because these are people don't know you, so they don't really have context, and we still don't know yet how motivated they are. So if they're like white hot, they're going to be, yep, great, call me, and they'll answer the phone. But that's the blue moon event. Most of the people have some trepidation about relisting again. They don't know you, so they're trying to figure something out. So we go to the next beat. Now we can take a little bit because the give is so big, so irresistible. Now we can do what all the other scripts do. Hey, Willie, by the way, it does look like a beautiful house. Why are you trying to sell it? So now we can ask, and we're into the second beat is more like therapy. We are allowing them to answer. We teach our telemarketers, bite down on your tongue. Don't interrupt these people. Let them get it out. And so now all of a sudden, they start to say, well, why? And all you say is a neutral word like interesting. You don't value judge it. You say interesting. On a scale of 1 to 10, how motivated would you say you are right now to sell it? Anything less than a 9 to 10 is not enough to close for an appointment. So when they're less than 9, we say, why not a 9 to 10? Now they emote a little bit more, and they're really thinking about their own obstacles out loud to us so we can figure, are they a solvable? Now, some of them, let's give an extreme example to the negative side. Yeah, I was just trying to get this. I don't really want to sell. I don't really have anywhere to go. Well, geez, then I don't think this information is going to help you if you don't really have a reason why and a motivation to do so. You're saying that you wouldn't have any real reason why that would bring you to 9 to 10 the next 12 months? Nope. Okay, well, listen, I'm not going to bother sending this to you. I appreciate your time. Do a takeaway. Because right. I don't want you going down the assembly line only to flunk out as a prospect if you can flunk out, you know, in that bridge gap between lead to prospect. Let's get rid of you. Because we really don't need, here's the thing that you're all going to like marvel at. You don't need that many successes to be successful. If you take Albany's median price and the commission you think you can get, and you figure what that is, and you divide it into your financial goal, you're going to see the number's not as big as you think it is, right? If you just start talking transactions and not money, it's always more transactions if you keep going to the left. So that's why we're very adamant now. We did that double opt-in in the script. And then lastly, if they are 9 to 10, hey, wonderful. You know, what I could do is I could bring the package to you myself, Willie. And while I'm there, in addition to the information that's in it, I could give you tips on what to do and what not to do to get top dollar. So I'll customize the plan for you, like I said. And I'll also do an analysis of your price and do a net sheet to show you after all expenses what you'd walk away with. May I do that? So if they're really motivated, that's a 5-stack. Now, they still might pull back and say, well, you know, that might be good, but why don't you send the stuff first? Because I don't know you. You could be some psychopath, right? Send it to me. Let me vet you. So when we go out there, the seller plan is really a seller plan, but there is some subtleties. There's sold properties in there, griffinfeaturedproperties.com, so they can go and see they're not the guinea pig, right? That this has been done before. So, hey, by the way, one little pro tip for the agents on the buy side in open houses. You don't need your own listings. You need to go borrow, especially those of you that are Miranda or a bigger company. You need to just go borrow somebody else's listing every weekend. That's what you need to do. We have agents that are in our sphere. We have a Griffin out in Seattle. They'll borrow it from other agents. You'd be surprised at how many other agencies will let you do an open house because nobody wants to do them. So don't forget, be resourceful, right? I meant to mention that earlier too.
Yeah, we've had some agents have success with it. And then you have some agents that don't want to do it or they say their company doesn't allow it. Right? Yeah. Have you had that in your market as well?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, there's some people that don't, you know, they'd be very uncomfortable with that. But there are some that you know, don't mind it. But what I would say is, you know, internally, hey, look, what's the best way to get an open house? Go get these listings the way I told you. That's exactly, you bring me back to the point. You want to be in full control, get the listing to your own open houses. That's the best way.
Yeah. All right, Daniel. Well, in closing,
yep.
Let's say we have agents 5 years or newer. We got a lot of agents on this call right now, 5 years or newer. What one piece of advice would you give them to get more business going in today's market? Because today's market is a lot different than it was a couple years ago. Okay. You got a lot of them freaking out and not knowing if this is the right business for them and everything else. But what would you say about that?
Find people with the context that's real to sell or buy a property. Find them, no matter what it takes. Be hungry. I gave you a bunch of ideas today. Willie gives you a ton of ideas. Find them. Now, when you find somebody with the context to buy or sell, and their motivation level is high, hopefully 9 to 10, then outwork everybody else by proactively helping them get the information that empowers them to make an informed decision. So if you have to go out to open houses for buyers, you will do it. If you have to go drive by other solds and pendings for sellers that are thinking about listing, you will do it. Do not sit in your home behind a computer or on your phone thinking that the fish jump up into the boat, skin themselves, and fry them up in a pan themselves. You have to go be proactive. It's the most important word I'm telling all my coaching members and all of you today. Be proactive with people that have context to sell or buy. Don't waste your time trying to bring Lazarus back from the dead. If they don't have a reason, then stop pursuing.
Great advice. Great advice. As always, Danny, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And everyone on the call, I really appreciate you guys coming on today's call. But Danny, once again, thank you again. And I'm sure we'll see you back in Albany sometime soon.
You bet. And this time without a kidney stone, okay?
Without a kidney stone, right. For those of you who don't remember, Danny was passing a kidney stone on stage. And I don't know how he did it, buddy, but he did it. And then he collapsed in his car and swiped
went back to the hospital. Went right back to the hospital.
Yeah. Back to the hospital. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we'll be in touch soon. Thank you.
Take care.
All right.